Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with the latest from the social media desk.
Coming up, Adama Barrow is set to be sworn in as the President of the Gambia in the Gambian Embassy in Senegal. We'll be talking to our correspondents in both countries in a few moments. Also on our programme, the proposed Marshall Plan with Africa, devised by Germany's Development Minister. Does the continent need it? We'll be hearing from the President of the African Development Bank.
I look forward to the Compact with Africa, the Marshall Plan, as you call it, and I think that that has to deal with the African-owned homegrown plan to transform the continent. And we have that, we call it High Fives.
And I'll be reading some of your responses to Gambia and also to Germany's Marshall Plan.
But first, we find out what's been happening around the globe.
I'm Isaac Mugabe with DW News. The United Nations Security Council is set to vote later today on a Senegalese draft resolution that would back efforts by West African regional bloc ECOWAS to ensure Gambian President Yahya Jammeh hands over power to his successor. Senegal has deployed hundreds of soldiers to its shared border with Gambia, and Nigeria has prepositioned warplanes and helicopters after ECOWAS said it would remove Jammeh if he did not hand over power to challenger Adama Barrow, who won an election in early December. British Prime Minister Theresa May has said her country is facing a period of momentous change following its decision to leave the EU, with Britain seeking to forge a new role in the world. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Thursday, Theresa May said Britain would step up to a new leadership role as a strong advocate for business, free markets and free trade after Brexit.
We are going to be a confident country that is in control of its own destiny once again. And it is because of that that we will be in a position to act in this global role. Because a country in control of its own destiny is more, not less, able to play a full role in underpinning and strengthening the multilateral rules-based system.
May's speech comes 2 days after she outlined her strategy for the Brexit discussions with the EU that will start after she formally triggers the 2-year exit discussions. Italian rescue services fear many people could have died after an avalanche plowed into a ski hotel on central Italy on Wednesday evening. 3 bodies have been recovered so far from the 4-star hotel that was buried by the avalanche. The affected hotel, Rigopiano, is located on the lower sections of the Gran Sasso mountain in Abruzzo, a region hit by several powerful quakes. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Dozens of medical students protested in Nairobi this Thursday, urging the government to tackle the ongoing medical crisis in the country. Their protest comes after university medical teachers joined a nationwide strike by state doctors, an action which students say has affected their learning process. Let's listen to some of the striking medical students.
We are demonstrating because we have not been learning for the past few weeks since we opened school. The doctors are on strike, and the government has not done enough in order to reinstate them to the hospital so that we can continue the learning process.
We need everyone that is a stakeholder in this strike to stop assuming that this is not a serious issue. It's actually a national crisis, but the government is not treating it as so, and we want them to come to action right now.
German Defense Minister Ursula von der Leyen has called on the US to clarify its foreign policy agenda. Questions on transatlantic relations are bound as Donald Trump prepares to take over the White House tomorrow. Von der Leyen defended NATO and the transatlantic relationship while calling for clarification from the incoming Trump administration regarding its policy towards Europe. And finally, U.S. Air Force B-2 bombers and drones attacked Islamic State militant camps in Libya, seeking to eliminate extremists who had escaped the former IS stronghold of Sirte. For more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. This is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.
I'm Mark Caldwell. In the Gambia, the mandate of President Yahya Jammeh expired at midnight. His successor, Adama Barrow, is due to be sworn in round about now. But this won't be happening in the Gambia itself, but in the Gambian embassy in neighbouring Senegal. In a moment, we'll be going live to Senegal, but we begin in the Gambia and join our correspondent there, Adrian Creech. Has President Jammeh said anything today about what he intends to do next?
Well, we just talked to his Minister of Information and he says the president will stay in power as the parliament requested him to do. He insists that this is in accordance with the constitution of the Gambia. Interestingly, he also said that he is not concerned about a military intervention. He thinks that won't happen. And again, he said what Jammeh has been saying in the past many times, the sovereignty of the country will never be compromised and it will be protected at all costs. And this is, of course, something that the opposition would definitely not agree on. It is not that we have foreign powers who want to intervene here. They are here because Adama Barrow and the opposition who won the election are asking them to do so.
Is there still hope for diplomacy? Is there still hope that a military intervention by ECOWAS forces could be avoided?
Well, that's what a lot of people here really hope. I spoke to a number of them today and they are very afraid. A lot of people told me that they are afraid of what's happening because they never had this scenario before. The streets today are deserted in Gambia. It's extremely empty. Most Gambians decided to stay at home. But many also told me that it can't be avoided. They don't see any other scenario. They don't believe that diplomacy still has a way. Jammeh had a chance to step down. His deadline was midnight. He didn't honor it. So most people here believe the last chance to get him out will be a military intervention.
Adama Barrow is about to be inaugurated as the next Gambian president in neighboring Senegal. What's been the public reaction to this in the Gambia itself?
Well, obviously, because there's hardly anybody on the street, there is not really a strong response to it. Of course, the opposition is rather disappointed since yesterday they have been saying that they want by all means to try to arrange this inauguration here in the Gambia. They actually plan to do it in the stadium with thousands of people coming there. They printed t-shirts, arranged everything, so this won't happen. So for their side, it is, of course, disappointing that it can't take place here, but it is of course also disappointing that they still have this uncertainty as of what will come afterwards.
Adrian Creech in the Gambia, many thanks. Next, we cross over to the Senegalese capital, Dakar, where, as we've been hearing, Adama Barrow is due to be inaugurated as the next president of the Gambia in the Gambian embassy. Our correspondent there is Emmanuel Landes. Emmanuel, can you please tell us where you are and describe the scene for us?
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I'm currently at the Gambian embassy in Dakar in Senegal, where for the last couple of hours, actually, crowds have been gathering outside. There's a massive media scrum, as you can imagine, and people are patiently waiting under the sun. Not much information has come about at the arrival time of Adama Barrow. He hasn't arrived yet, I can confirm that. However, the Gambian embassy is waiting for around 40 to 50 guests. These so far will include a representative from the African Union, a representative from the GIGU, and also confirm that the committee chairman from ECOWAS, Marcel Alain de Souza, will also be present. And from the Senegalese side, we've had the Prime Minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Manke Ndiaye, arrive at the Gambian embassy. And from the Gambian side, I can also say that we've had a few words with Aliou Momar Ndiaye, who was the chairman of the Electoral Commission in Gambia. And to a few words to the press, he told us that basically for security reasons, the inauguration is taking place in Dakar, but that he has full faith in ECOWAS and that they will be able to place Adama Barrow at the head of Gambia.
How have Senegalese been reacting to this rather unusual event in this country, in their country?
Well, Yahya Jammeh has been in power for 22 years, so Senegalese community are well aware, if I can say, of his antics. The big surprise was the fact that Adama Barrow actually came narrowly beat Yahya Jammeh in December 1st election. So everything that's followed on, if I can say, the sort of theatre of conceding defeat and then rejecting Adama Barrow's win, was somehow to be expected. So some of the community are looking forward to a fast revolution, if I can say. And up until this morning, there was a heavy cloud of suspense as the Mauritanian president went to Banjul to speak with Yaya Jammeh as a last effort, basically, for mediation. And when he came back to Dakar at midnight alone and had a conversation with Macky Sall, we were told, as well as Adama Barrow,
Emmanuel Lande, I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us from Dakar. Abu.
Mark, we've had a lot of responses from African leaders with regard to what's happening in the Gambia. Starting with the tweet that from Adama Barrow himself, who said he will be inaugurated in the Gambia. And you had a response from Botswana, who said they will no longer recognize Yahya Jammeh as a president. And also John Magufuli of Tanzania has tweeted saying, we will no longer recognize Yahya Jammeh as president of the Republic of Gambia. We do not support unjust values and dictatorship. Yoweri Museveni of Uganda has responded, saying, Gambia is a sovereign state. Any invasion by her neighbors is unwarranted and unlawful. I condemn in strongest terms possible. That's also on Twitter. And we also have this response from Raila Odinga, Kenya's opposition leader, who said, if ECOWAS successfully enforces the will of the people in Gambia, East Africans must follow the same in Burundi. War is unavoidable.
Abu, many thanks. Earlier this week, Germany's development minister, Gerd Müller, disclosed more details of his proposed Marshall Plan with Africa. Among other things, it would include boosting Africa's economies and promoting education and training. Support for the plan in Germany would appear muted, but what do African officials make of it? Does the continent need it? Helena Humphrey put that question to the president of the African Development Bank, Akubumi Adesina.
I look forward to the compact with Africa, the Marshall Plan, as you call it, for Africa. And I think that has to deal with the African-owned homegrown plan to transform the continent. And we have that, we call it high fives. First is to light up and power Africa. Energy, power is the most important thing in Africa. And second is to feed Africa, to actually transform agriculture, which is what Africa has as a huge comparative advantage, into a competitive advantage. The third is to help Africa to industrialize. Because when you industrialize, you will be able to create a lot of decent jobs, get a lot of young people employed, and that make Africa more competitive on global stage. The fourth, of course, is to help to integrate Africa. We call it regional integration, expand the market size for Africa so that Africa can trade a lot more with itself, not just depend on international markets with all the volatilities. And fifth, and quite honestly, for me, the most important, is to improve the quality of life of the people of Africa, investing in education for the youth and creating jobs. And, you know, I believe that the solution to the migration crisis is not in Europe. That solution is in creating new economic opportunities in Africa. And at the African Development Bank, we have just launched a major program called Jobs for Africa's Youth to help to create 25 million jobs for Africa's youth within the next 10 years and to create a new generation of young agricultural entrepreneurs for Africa.
Right. So would it be then fair to say that there is a silver lining to this? Because the question, of course, is if this plan would even see the light of day were it not for the migration crisis. But could renewed interest from Europe and from Germany in curbing migration, could an institution like yours capitalize on that and have Western private sector invest in Africa?
No, absolutely. You know, don't forget that Africa, when it comes to reforms for private sector investment in Africa, is big. You know, Africa accounted for 30% of all the business regulatory improvements done globally last year. So there's a lot going on with that. And I really believe, as president of the African Development Bank, that the key to Africa's development, sustainable growth and development, is to support the private sector. We have pretty much increased our own financing to private sector by 10 times. And we are actually deploying lots of instruments to attract private investment into Africa. One of the things that we will be launching this year to attract global pension funds and global sovereign wealth funds and other institutional investors to Africa is what we call Africa Investment Forum. German companies, for example, will be able to come to support on renewable energy in Africa, set up an automobile industry in Africa.
That was Akinwunmi Adesina talking to Helena Humphrey Abu.
Mark, Gambia's Chief of Defence Staff, Usman Baji, has said, we are not going to involve ourselves militarily in this conflict. This is a political dispute. And then one final response from Geoffrey Onyema, Nigeria's foreign minister, who said, support for our Nigerian Air Force deployed today on ECOWAS mandate of keeping citizens' electoral will in the Gambia.
You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. My name is Mark Caldwell.
And I am Abubakar Jallo.
Coming up, what is it like to be gay in Malawi?
It's very challenging, it's difficult. Here in Malawi, we're facing many challenges, being tortured by people in the community, being chased at school, even in hospitals.
And I will be looking at several topics, but key among them will be Germany's so-called Marshall Plan with Africa. Mark.
US President Barack Obama will leave office tomorrow after serving two terms. When he was first inaugurated in 2009, there was huge enthusiasm for his presidency in Africa. America had elected its first black president, and his father was from Kenya. There was the hope that Obama would make Africa a priority. So, what happened? Here's Daniel Pels.
Jubilant crowds flooded the streets of Ghana's capital Accra in July 2009. Barack Obama made his first visit to Africa as President of the United States. The expectations of the people were high, and Obama delivered. In a speech to Ghana's parliament, he called on Africans to take their fate into their own hands, shun corruption, and demand accountability from their leaders. Alex Vines is the head of the Africa program at British think tank Chatham House.
It was very influential as a speech at that particular moment in time, and I think will last. Some of the thoughts in there and prescriptions will last, even though they may be not so fashionable right at this moment.
But the Obama mania in Africa dwindled. Africa wasn't a priority for Obama during his first years in office. He had to battle a growing economic crisis and rising unemployment at home instead. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan demanded his attention as well. Obama never visited Africa again in his first term. In the later years of his presidency, he became a regular visitor to the continent. His speeches were still inspirational, but often actions did not follow words. Martin Olo is a political analyst from Kenya. This is how he rates Obama's performance with regards to Africa.
I would say that out of 10, I have been 6. 6 because he understood the issues of Africa, but he was also constrained by the other problems in Africa, poor accountability, poor governance, and leadership challenges. I mean, you have a leadership that is not responsive.
The American government did not always shun such leaders. For instance, the United States continued intelligence cooperation with authoritarian regimes in Ethiopia and Sudan. But Obama made positive headlines as well. He hosted the first U.S.-Africa summit in 2014. More than 50 African heads of state came to Washington. At the summit, Obama lauded Africa as a continent of opportunities. He announced a $33 billion U.S. investment package and called for more U.S. investments on the continent. Alex Vines again.
Underpinning it was a shift of U.S. policy moving away from being particularly focused on humanitarianism and counterterrorism to emphasizing also that Africa was a continent of the future and that it was also about trade and growth.
For Alex Vines, it's clear what parts of President Obama's Africa policy will be remembered: trade rather than aid or security.
Daniel Peltz.
Youzone.
The arrival of hundreds of thousands of migrants in Germany has focused the minds of German politicians and set them wondering how young people can be encouraged to make more of their lives at home in Africa rather than attempting the crossing to Europe. Germany has enlisted the help of its diplomats in Africa to try and find the beginnings of a solution to the problem, Isaac Kelechi reports.
– Africa has 60% of its population below 35 years of age, and a significant number of the Ghanaian population is also youthful, but with demanding aspirations. Critical among them is securing a better job and living conditions. Due to lack of opportunities locally, they continue to find alternatives abroad. Europe is one of their destinations. Adam Youssef, a driver for a vegetable producing company in Accra, has attempted on several occasions to travel to Europe, especially Germany, without success.
You see, Ghana, our problem is jobs. If the government can provide us jobs, I think no one can travel anymore. Because let's take it, rent, food, everything is high. And then the money we are in Ghana is less, especially in the month. So if the government will provide us a job, I think it will be better.
It's because of efforts to make Africa comfortable for people like Youssef that the German government is seeking to provide support through strategic cooperation with its African partners. In Ghana's capital Accra, German diplomats held conference with several youth groups from 20 African countries. The focus was to get a pool of ideas to help Africa keep its youth and discourage them from traveling to Europe. Gesine Spatz, an official from the German embassy in Ghana, explains why her country has stepped in to address the challenges facing youth in Africa.
Of course, every country has to find its own solution, but it is in a mutual interest of Germany and the other European countries to have a stable and growing economy and political situation on Africa, because we are close neighbors.
Halidu Ibrahim leads thousands of youth for his political party, the National Democratic Congress. He was part of a 7-member panel that met these diplomats. He talks about the key issues and proposals from the panel.
We gave them the way forward. We gave them why you see a lot of African youth leaving Africa or leaving the shores of Africa to Europe. It has to do with exploring. We have a lot of them. They don't want to go there and stay. They just want to go there and explore and come back. We also have others who feel when they go there, they can make a lot of money, come back and invest.
Germany hopes its pursuit of a holistic approach will also get African governments to take up responsibility and ownership of the issues. Halidu says the German government's effort is welcomed and vital.
I believe when they are able to support us in diverse ways, economically, educational-wise, and we can also talk about politically, help our government with some policies that could help the African youth to stay in Africa, work for Africa, so that the whole globe will be a peaceful place to stay. Ghana or Africa in a whole, you know, we can't solve our problem alone. We need partners.
Hopefully, the ideas available to the German diplomats will bring results sooner as Europe struggles to deal with the migration of African youth to its territories.
Isaac Kelechi reporting.
Speaking out.
Discrimination against sexual minorities is rife in Africa. In Malawi, laws from the colonial era banning homosexuality are still in force, although the government did say in November of last year it would hold public consultations on possible reform. The southern African country relies on international aid money, and its anti-gay laws have strained relations with donors. At the individual level, one of the main problems lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people face is getting access to healthcare. Miriam Kaliza reports from Blantyre.
Dressed in a red checked shirt and a pair of camouflage shorts, sporting his signature Mohawk hairdo, 18-year-old Precious is already seated, waiting patiently in the office where we are supposed to have our interview. He's never faced a reporter before, but he seems eager to share his story. It's a story he rarely talks about in a society where people like him are often considered outcasts. When asked about his experiences trying to get medical care, Precious's eagerness to speak evaporates.
It was like 14 years when I realized that I'm gay. It's very challenging, it's difficult. Here in Marawi, we're facing many challenges, being tortured by people in the community, being chased at school, even in hospitals. Many people in my community say that one day we'll kill because we're Satanism. We bring something that is not our culture. I'm like this, I can't change myself.
Have you ever maybe faced challenges in accessing healthy services?
All right, I went to the hospital when they have an STI. So there was like onwards. Yeah, so I went to the hospital. And then they were asking me, how did you get these things? Then I have to tell them the truth for me to receive a better treatment. They told them I'm a gay. You see, they just went out calling another doctors. Then they started laughing at me. I have come with problems. Then they started laughing at me and torturing me. They just think that we're doing this for Satanism.
Precious's story is not an isolated one. Many lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender Malawians face these hostilities every day, especially when it comes to seeking health care. One organization that's trying to change that is CEDEP, the Center for the Development of People. It works to promote minority rights in Malawi. Maria Ngluwe is the coordinator of a project aimed at ensuring equal access to health care for those in the LGBTI community. And so many people are mistreated at clinics. CEDEP is working to engage the health workers themselves.
Currently, we are encouraging the community to go to the health facilities where we train. So to avoid the problems which have been reported previously, where the clients maybe they ended hiding the conditions which they brought them to the hospital. But because the number is just few, we're still looking at increasing the number so that we should have a bigger coverage.
Under Malawian law, sex between men is punishable offense with maximum 14 years imprisonment. In 2016, religious leaders held a protest demanding the government to enforce laws that criminalize same-sex relationships, arguing that they threaten traditional family values. Homosexuality is illegal in 73 countries worldwide. Of these, 33 are in Africa, and 4 of these countries sentence gay people to death engaging in same-sex acts.
Mariam Kaliza reporting from Blantyre. Abu.
Now, fighting poverty in Africa is not just a moral obligation, but it is also in the self-interest of wealthy countries like Germany. This is what German Development Minister Gerd Müller said as he presented his long-awaited Marshall Plan for Africa in Berlin. When this response from Premslau Skudrodian said, I'm afraid this plan wouldn't work in Africa because of corruption, dictators and violence. We have Matthew Akerson who said, Africans must have their own plans and they don't need any foreign plans to prosper. Trade is trade, business is business. We don't need aid from anyone. We are not beggars. And this response from Francisca Bonin to Matthew there saying, if you as a population are not beggars, your political leaders are, but you are right. The only thing we need in Africa is to have those corrupt politicians removed. Eduardo Fabricio said, unfortunately, many African countries still need foreign help. You may be proud, but you shouldn't ignore the facts. Many Africans still die from hunger and curable illnesses, and only Western development aid regularly prevents catastrophes. That's his opinion there. Let's change to a different topic now and go to the World Economic Forum in Davos. There was this question that, what is the African agenda at the World Economic Forum? And DW did an interview with Tony Olumelu, who is a Nigerian economist, an entrepreneur and a philanthropist, and who has his responses talking about some really interesting things there. And then Charles Ongelo said, does Africa have any chance, let alone voice at the Davos Economic Summit? And if so, who are African voices? Africa has a major internal war of democratic and governance credibility between its exploitative rulers and the majority poor. This schism needs to be addressed first before any clear representation and interest issues can be visualized. And now let's go to the Gambia. First of all, interestingly, have you tried the Google search President of Gambia, Mark?
No, I haven't, I was confessed.
If you do, then you'd find some really interesting answers there. Basically, it gives you two presidents, Adama Barrow and Yahya Jammeh. And we have this response there from Emmanuel Ezudugwe, who said, Yahya Jammeh, please give peace a chance. Show your love for Gambians. And he quotes, my ambition was no blood, nobody's blood, from Goodluck Jonathan, former president of Nigeria. And Adeniyi Olufemi said, this is becoming more interesting. We pay for peaceful transition in the Gambia. And we have Joseph Malu, who said, right decision for the safety of our nation, that is talking about the Nigerian intervention there. And Gift Chibelenga said, great move by the Gambian army authorities. He's talking about the decision there by not intervening within into the political affairs. And we have Ulisa Amaife, who said, more unarmed protesters have been killed in Buhari's in this regime. Anyways, I'm out.
Okay, Abu. Our main story is, of course, in the Gambia. The mandate of President Yahya Jammeh has expired. His successor was due to be sworn in at a ceremony in the Gambian embassy in neighbouring Senegal. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And from me, Abubakar Jallo.
Bye now.